it's happening by the thousands each day.
He is talking about attacks on Asian Americans. I'm Ira Melman. Coming up, one of the largest and longest lasting COVID-19 lockdowns is coming to an end. China is not happy over new arms sales from the U.S. to Taiwan. A new conservative judge has been sworn in as the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. And COVID-19 cleaning could soon be done by an army of robots. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Amid the ongoing threat of the coronavirus, there are surging reports of xenophobic and racist incidents targeting members of the Asian American community in the United States. One college professor has started a website in an effort to collect information about the rise in attacks and what are the main reasons for them. I talk with that professor, Russell Jung, at San Francisco State University, about what he thought was the chief reason.
It's stemming from the Republican Party's strategy to scapegoat China for COVID-19 and displace blame from the current administration to China for COVID-19. As Americans hear that the virus is Chinese, the virus gets racialized, and it's seen as a Chinese virus, and then Chinese people are seen to be those infected, that Chinese people are the ones who are infecting other Americans, and that scapegoating of Chinese in the U.S. then leads to higher rates of racism, interpersonal violence, and attacks and assaults. So we launched our website that reported that receives self-reported incidents of racism, and we're over 2,700 incidents to date. They're rising, and they range from verbal and harassment, where people are yelled at, often have racial slurs slung at them, often told to go back to China. Those make up 70% of our cases. Another 20% of our cases are deliberate shunning, where people avoid Asians. They would see Asians and move aside, not serve them. About 8% are civil rights violations, where we're mistreated at the workplace. And 8% include physical assaults that can constitute hate crimes, where people could get arrested for doing racially motivated crimes. We just received the tip of the iceberg. Another survey by USC found that 39% of Asian Americans had experienced direct incidents of racism. So we're tracking more of the kind of incidents that are occurring, the language being employed, and who's being attacked.
What kind of numbers do we have here?
40% of California Asian Americans experiencing racism would be over 2 million people, right? It's happening by the thousands each day. We have reports from 47 states. It's widespread and pervasive. And we found that people are attacking whom they think are the most vulnerable. Women are harassed 2.4 times more than men, and elderly and youth are often attacked as well.
Is this limited to the United States?
No, this is a global phenomenon. And interestingly, right after we implemented our reporting center, similar sites were set up in Australia and Canada using the same type of coding categories that we employed. And they find really similar trends about the types of verbal harassment, language used, and both the researchers in Canada and Australia say it's President Trump's language and rhetoric that incites increased violence in those places as well. So I was pretty stunned to hear that this inflammatory rhetoric works across the globe as well.
The xenophobia against Chinese Asian Americans is nothing new in the United States. Can you detail that a little bit?
We knew that whenever an epidemic comes from Asia, that Asians would be met with interpersonal violence and racist policies. And that's why we set up the reporting center, because we wanted to document the racism and then hold government accountable. And that happened in the 19th century with the Chinese Exclusion Act. The three plagues of leprosy, smallpox, and malaria were blamed on Chinese. Chinese were also blamed for taking away white workers' jobs. And so they passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. More recently, when SARS came, again, Asian Americans were shunned and attacked. So we were ready when COVID-19 came. And sure enough, we've seen racist violence and we've seen anti-immigrant policies. What's been reinvoked is the yellow peril fear that Asians would come in and dominate the West, especially with their diseases. And so this yellow peril fear is being invoked at this moment, and it's being used to exclude Asians, to harass Asians, and to blame Asians.
Is this the most dangerous this has been in recent years at this point before the election, or has it been worse?
I think clearly, you know, in the 19th century, the physical violence was virulent and, you know, displaced 300 Chinese American communities. So I think, you know, clearly in the 19th century it was worse. In recent history, it's similar to what happened after 9/11 when hundreds and thousands of Muslims and Arab Americans and South Asians were attacked and then also met with racist policy. So I sort of compare it to after 9/11. But today we have the internet, which circulates racist memes and posts even more. When the president tweets, his voice gets magnified a million times over. So I think the power of the internet and the power of the president's pulpit incites a lot more racism than like, let's say, in 9/11.
That was Professor Russell Jung, Chair and Professor of the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University. Attempts to get reaction to Professor Jung's comments from the Republican Party or the Trump administration have gone unanswered at the time of this presentation. VOA Asia continues. European governments moved Tuesday to set new curbs in motion to try to rein in a fast-growing surge of coronavirus infections and provide economic balm to help businesses survive the pandemic. The United States, Russia, France, Sweden, Poland, and other countries have registered record numbers of infections in recent days as autumn turns to winter in the Northern Hemisphere and people socialize indoors where the risk of infection is higher. More than 43 million people have been infected by the coronavirus globally. Over a million have died, according to a Reuters tally, with the United States leading the way in the number of infections and deaths. One of the world's longest COVID-19 lockdowns is coming to an end in the Australian city of Melbourne. From Tuesday, all shops, cafes, and restaurants can reopen, and strict stay-at-home orders will be lifted. The lockdown was imposed in early July in response to a deadly second wave of infections. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Victoria, Australia's second most populous state, has for a second consecutive day recorded no new coronavirus infections or fatalities. A sustained fall in daily cases has allowed the authorities to end one of the world's longest COVID-19 lockdowns in the city of Melbourne. From Tuesday, the retail and hospitality industries can reopen, although conditions still apply. Face coverings remain mandatory, and cafes and restaurants can serve a maximum of 20 people inside and 50 outdoors. Weddings can now proceed with up to 10 guests, and funerals with 20 mourners. Strict stay-at-home orders imposed on Melbourne's 5 million residents will end. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews says now is the time to bring the lockdown to an end.
We are able to say that now is the time to open up. This belongs to every single Victorian. Every single Victorian who's followed the rules, stayed the course, worked with me and my team to bring this second wave to an end. But it is not over. This virus is not going away. It is going to continue to be a feature of our lives every day until a vaccine turns up. These are big steps.
Victoria State has been at the centre of Australia's COVID-19 crisis. It's had the majority of infections and almost 90% of the nation's virus fatalities. The lockdown has not been universally popular. Two people have been charged over an anti-lockdown protest in Melbourne last week, including a woman who allegedly kicked a police horse. The state government has been accused of being too cautious while jobs were lost, and there are concerns that the mental health consequences will be dire. Victoria's Conservative opposition leader is Michael O'Brien.
There'll be scars on the psyche of this state that will not heal. There are many, many people whose lives have changed permanently because of what they've had to endure over the last few months.
More than 27,500 coronavirus cases have been diagnosed in Australia, and 905 people have died. The federal government has said there have been four critical parts to the nation's response to the pandemic: the closure of its international borders to foreign travellers, widespread testing, reliable contact tracing, and community respect for hygiene and physical distancing protocols. Victoria State Government has indicated it plans to ease other restrictions in early November that are likely to include reopening gyms and allowing residents to travel more than 25 kilometres from home. As Melbourne's lockdown comes to an end, there is immense relief and celebration among residents, or as local media have put it, there have been cheers, tears and beers. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department has approved the potential sale of 100 Boeing-made Harpoon coastal defense systems to Taiwan, a deal that has a potential value of up to $2.37 billion. The move comes days after the State Department approved the potential sale of three other weapon systems to Taiwan, including sensors, missiles, and artillery that could have a total value of $1.8 billion. Taiwan's defense ministry spokesman Xi Shun-wen said Tuesday that the recent U.S. arms sales to Taiwan will enhance its overall combat capabilities to maintain peace and stability over the Taiwan Strait. The announcement comes a day after China said it will sanction U.S. defense contractors, including Lockheed Martin Corporation, Boeing Company's Defense Division, and Raytheon Technologies Corporation over proposed arms sales to Taiwan. Disinfecting public spaces is a major undertaking, but it is essential for a safe return to normal activity. Now an army of robots that uses ultraviolet light to disinfect surfaces in the air, as Matt Dibble reports.
When all the other workers have left, this robot gets busy cleaning hospital rooms. It is disinfecting using a form of ultraviolet light called UVC. Andy Molnar is a vice president for UVD Robots.
UVC light in particular is the optimal germicidal wavelength to deactivate bacteria, fungus, and viruses. And it does it either on surfaces or whether they're in the air. So the robot was originally designed for hospital use to reduce hospital-acquired infections, which is a major problem in every health system globally. And it's very effective at doing that.
The robot is first trained on where to go and how long to stay there. After that, it can perform the same task autonomously.
Since COVID-19, all of a sudden, we were inundated with interest in the technology in a number of different sectors.
UV robots are now at work in hotels, offices, and airports around the world. For safety, people must leave the area or wear protective gear.
All forms of UV light are known to be harmful to the skin and to the eyes. And so it's very important that people exit the room or the space before the lamps come on.
Light-sensitive stickers can be used to determine how well the robot has performed.
And we know exactly for each bacteria or for each virus exactly what energy level is required to deactivate it.
Manual cleaning of high-touch surfaces is still recommended by experts. But the robots are adding another line of defense in the war against deadly microbes. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
Thank you for joining us. Our thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.